Hello, and welcome back to Current Account. I'm your host, Clay Lowry, the Executive Vice President here at the Institute of International Finance. On Current Account, I try to talk about what I see as the most important current issues in international finance and economics while providing my own U.S. politics and policy angle on these different issues when it is relevant. On this week's Current Account, we're in the midst of the spring meetings of the IMF World Bank. We had a good interview last week with Tim Adams, our CEO and president here at the IIF, about these meetings. One of the issues we didn't discuss very much with Tim and has been coming up is a conversation about China. The state of the Chinese economy has been a hot topic recently. And part of the reason it's a hot topic is because I think that there is disagreements and confusion about exactly what's happening with the economy. On top of this, we just saw the U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen go to China to talk about the economic issues in China, and she raised a few concerns, which I'll get into as we discuss this topic. To begin with, China's economy has had a slightly better growth in the first quarter of 2024, 5.3% annually, which was greater than what many forecasters had projected. Some of this is due to China simply doing slightly better than expected, and some of it has to do with rebasing effects and other statistical issues. Putting aside that one number effect, there seems to be two narratives that are kind of driving what's happening in the Chinese economy. They both go from the issue of China is trying to make an adjustment from an economic growth model that it has pursued for many years and been highly successful to a new model going forward as the economy has changed. Now, in my mind, and this is overly simplistic, the different narratives are one, China is walking across a beam to get to this new growth model. It's juggling a variety of different balls while navigating a substantial drop if it falls, but a drop that is manageable. And while China's economy could be hurt, it will not be devastated. There seems to be another narrative, which is probably more the minority view, is that China is actually walking across a tightrope to get to the other side while juggling knives and chainsaws and something with fire on it, and looking into something closer to the abyss. Obviously, a lot scarier prospect. Now, what are the implications of either narrative on spillover to other economies and to broader markets? So, China's economy has largely been driven by a state-led model, driven by significant public and private sector investment, manufacturing, and an export-led growth. The theory for at least the last dozen years is that China was going to transition to a more consumption-led model, one that is based on domestic demand, more private sector-oriented, and will seek out greater productivity. But this effort, and I think both narratives agree with this, has stalled. And we have seen a slowdown in household consumption, in consumer confidence, and in domestic demand as the property sector has declined, if not burst, and as local government debt levels have increased substantially. At the same time, there's been a push in China to move towards manufacturing and production of electric vehicles, which we read about all the time now, greater battery storage, and the solar industry. So this has led to greater growth in production and investment. Combining this together, though, we have seen capacity utilization rates fall to seven-year lows, while at the same time, there's been a surge in manufacturing trade surplus. We've had a deflationary economy and weakening equity markets as companies appear to emphasize market share over profitability. So why has all of this happened? Let me provide three reasons, but they're not definitive. First is the effect of the pandemic, which has, in China's case, the lockdowns on its economy were much longer than almost any other country on earth. And this has most likely had what economists now refer to as a scarring effect on the consumer in China. Second, we have seen deflation, particularly because the property sector bubble has if deflated or burst. And third, the government has actually, through policy measures, pushed into much more advanced manufacturing. Now, the narratives basically suggest that this is something that China needs to do to muddle through in order to get to the other side. You need economic growth or that will create problems, but this will allow China to eventually get towards a consumption-led domestic demand economy. The other narrative is that China is stuck in a system with regulations, a taxation system, and that can't be unwound very easily. And so while there may be at times cyclical stability, structurally, China is on a decline. What are the implications? Probably the most important one that we need to remember is China's economy is the second largest in the world. So anything that happens in these areas is going to have implications for the rest of the world. We saw this recently with Secretary Yellen's trip to China, where she raised concerns about China's overcapacity and the promotion of exports in the green technology areas, creating tensions around the world. I don't think she used these words, but this is sometimes called dumping. And so how do countries react to that? Do they put in more tariffs, as we've sometimes seen from the United States? Or do they come up with other what are called countervailing duties? And sometimes you see these ideas coming from Europe and not just from the United States. This has implications because instead of there being decoupling or de-risking, as policymakers have been talking about in the United States and in Europe, there's actually going to be a concern that there's going to be too much dependence on China. And so that leads towards these backlashes. It also could lead towards issues around the currency in China. 10 years ago, actually probably less than that, the biggest concern you heard from policymakers, particularly in the United States, was that China was manipulating its currency in order to get export gains. You don't really hear that anymore. But if some of these trends continue, do we fall right back into the trap that we saw in the 2000s and part of the 2010s? More domestically, and as noted, it has had an effect on Chinese equities. It is also having an effect on Chinese employment figures, because while they are moving towards these advanced manufacturing jobs, there aren't as many of them. And then how does this all affect China's fiscal structure? Some would say that it's actually having a pretty negative impact on the fiscal side, and you're actually starting to see that as the deficits in China are starting to grow and grow substantially. A weak property sector and vulnerable local government could also impact the asset quality, which could increase vulnerability in both the non-financial banking system, which we've already seen, as well as eventually in China's banking system. Which way this will play out is an ongoing debate. But one sentiment seems to be shared amongst most experts, and that the transition that China is going through is not going to be a walk in the park. So now it's time for my 3-2-1. That's my three main takeaways, two things I'm looking forward to, and my one sports fact. My three main takeaways are, first, the burst in the property bubble is hurting China's household consumption, business confidence, and potentially banking quality. Next, as a strategy to pursue a new growth model, Beijing is supporting the growth of the manufacturing sector, especially the more advanced technology, and exporting some of that sector, which is creating its own sort of backlash. And that leads to my third issue, which is the problem is that China is already accounting for about 30% of global manufacturing. Further boosting China's manufacturing will inevitably put China on a collision course with the more advanced industrial economies, as we are already beginning to see. The two things I'm looking forward to. I should say I'm looking forward to figuring out which of these two narratives is right, but I think it's going to be years until we figure that out. So let's come up with two others. The first is how Beijing will respond to the pleas of Secretary Yellen or, to more recently, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz. On the one hand, Beijing clearly understands the concerns that are being raised by Washington and Brussels. On the other, it is difficult for them to pursue another path given that they are at least trying to muddle through this very difficult transition. The next is the reaction you might see from Washington. We've talked in the past about this is a U.S. election season, and there will be to-ing and fro-ing between the two candidates on China. And just last week, we saw President Biden strongly suggest to his team that they triple steel tariffs on China going forward. Whether that happens, it does suggest that this is already starting to have an impact. And now, my one sports fact. For the first time in 11 years, German soccer team Bayern Munich will lose their title as champion of the Germans men professional soccer league known as the Bundesliga. Undefeated Bayer Leverkusen is going to win its first championship title ever. Congratulations to Bayer Leverkusen. But what I have found interesting is the idea that a team at such a high level of sports could be the top spot for as long as Bayern Munich has. So we looked into other teams that have had dominant records in their leagues. Here's a few examples. In men's professional basketball, the Boston Celtics dominated the 1960s when they won 8 NBA championships in a row. The most successful baseball team in history, the New York Yankees, and their all-time high was 5 in a row back in the 1950s. In women's college soccer, the North Carolina Tar Heels won an impressive 9 national championships in a row from 1986 to 1994. And in men's college basketball, the dominant teams of UCLA won 7 consecutive national titles from 1967 to 1973. None of these teams won as many as 11 in a row, like Bayern Munich. And as we record this, the great American golfer Nelly Korda has won 4 tournaments in a row and is going in to try to win her 5th in a row, which is actually a major championship. And 5 in a row has only been accomplished twice in women's golf history. But the question I have is that the dominance of a team like Bayern Munich, does it raise the specter of whether or not is this a competitive league after all? You don't see this in the English Premier League. I think teams have won 3 in a row. Or even in Spain's La Liga, where I think the longest streak was Barcelona, but that was 30 years ago when they won 4 in a row. Sports are more fun when there is strong competition between teams and within a league. But before I get on my high horse, let me say that Bayern Munich, which did get knocked off in their own league, has just made the semifinals of the Champions League within Europe, which pulls together all of these different leagues and gets their best teams to go against each other. And Bayern Munich just reached the semifinals. Well, anyway, something to consider. And that's going to wrap up this episode of Current Account. As always, we'd love to hear your feedback on the show as we constantly look to improve and enhance the experience for you, the listener. We can be reached at podcast@iif.com. All our episodes can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Thanks for listening, and goodbye.